Hello and welcome to the Worcester Observer podcast. I'm your host, Rob George, trying not to bang the table there as I put my hands down. I'm joined by Claire again this week to take you through everything on worcesterobserver.co.uk. And also a big hello to everyone on Instagram, because Claire's just shown me the weight of comments we're getting on there.
It's flying,
especially about the gulls as well.
Have got a lot to say about our Worcester seagulls.
The seagulls, yes, who basically look like dogs now. I was in the city on Friday and one walked past and they're the size of a dog.
No.
They
scare me a little bit, actually. I've always been a little bit scared of seagulls. I think after seeing that movie, you know, back in the day, what is it, Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds.
Yeah.
I've always been a little bit scared of seagulls. But people have certainly got a lot to say.
They certainly have. And I think we'll move the running order around. We weren't going to start off with this, but I think we should. What you'll read in the paper version, if you're reading the paper version, do go online because it's been updated. But Alan Amos has called for a scheme to cull the gulls. He wants them gone, eradicated, removed, gone, finished. Because he described them as flying rats and an epidemic. Now, it's fair to say this has enraged you. I was talking to Claire before we came on that in a drive to Worcester from Redditch last night to cover the City Council meeting, the amount of you that were on Facebook, and as I've seen on Instagram, this has really upset you. And
well, we're all animal lovers, aren't we? And even though seagulls scare me, I don't want to think of killing them or killing anything. So I think that's the general consensus out there, isn't it?
There are things in place, and I get Alan's point. They are noisy. There's more of them. And actually, speaking at the council meeting last night, I'll give you some breaking news update. Speaking at the council meeting last night, the council leader, Councillor Mark Baylis, has admitted the problem is growing because there seems to be more of them, but has reined back from a call and said all the options need to be looked at to tackle a growing problem. So I think the culling of the gulls may not be...
Why are there so many?
I have no idea. Breeding?
And also, I grew up in Worcester and, you know, I've always, as a child, used to go shopping there and going out as teenagers there in all the pubs and clubs. And I never remembered so many seagulls.
No, I think there's more.
There's definitely more.
I think there is more. But a very, very knowledgeable person on the subject actually said to me last night, well, how do you call them? Because Worcester is by water. They will flock to water.
Oh, right.
So if you do get rid of them, more will come because there's water. And that could be the problem. I don't know the answer. It has enraged a lot of you, and thank you all so much for your comments. And it's been interesting to read that a lot of you would probably favour culling some councillors rather than...
Some of the comments were actually quite funny, yeah.
Yes, some of them were very, very good. Some of them were quite serious, though. There was a very interesting debate on our Facebook page, and thank you all for contributing for it. But go on at worcesterobserver.co.uk. The story's updated from the paper with Councillor Mark Baylis's comments. I think this is going to run through the summer and probably into the autumn as well, because I think something's going to change, but I don't think it's going to be the culling that a certain Worcester councillor wants.
And where do they go? Do we know where they go in the winter? Because there aren't as many. Do you know what we need? If anyone out there knows about seagulls, that would be great if they came on the podcast, because we've got questions, haven't we, Rob?
That would be great. And also, if there are any seagulls out there as well that want to put their point across, then do feel free.
Some of them
to
are very clever, you know. Yeah. Have you seen those video YouTube clips where the seagulls walk into shops and like come out with a bag of crisps and can open the bag of crisps? And they're quite smart.
But they are, but they're also very cunning. I'll tell you the story. When I was younger, my went to Barmouth in Wales, beautiful, beautiful village on the West Wales coast. I went with my mum and dad and my nan and granddad, who was, you know, my mum's not here, but obviously my nan and granddad are no longer with us either. And my granddad had by the seaside, so you can have fish and chips. So to this day, I don't understand, but my granddad thought in his infinite wisdom there were seagulls around, he'd offer a seagull a chip.
Thinking if he gave one away, they'd leave him alone.
Exactly.
I can tell what's coming.
So the seagull was like, that's a very, very generous idea. However, what you don't know is that I'll just take the entire tray. Swooped in, took the tray out of his hand, pretty much, tried to fly away with it. Everything went flying because, obviously, the weight. And my granddad was left without any.
That's why they scare me a little bit, because I've had a similar experience when I was a kid and a seagull came down and took something straight out of my mouth when I was on the beach. And I remember, just being terrified. So to this day, that's why I'm a little bit scared of them. But
I think that they're... I keep my distance. I mean, I'm 6'2", but I keep my distance. But they'll just walk through the high street.
Yeah.
Worcester High Street, obviously bustling as it always is on Friday. Just one. I swear that I don't know even if seagulls have got shoulders, but he's sort of pulled back his shoulder. He's strolling through the high street like, I don't care.
They know we're all talking about them. They know they're on this week's front page of the Worcester Observer. Well, that's what it is.
And there did seem to be an awful lot around the council house last night. So I don't know whether they were trying to stage a mutiny and try to find Councillor Alan Amos to show their displeasure.
Keep us updated, Rob, because I'm dying to know what happens and how they manage to sort it all out.
I think it's going to run and run, and I think there's going to be a solution, but I don't think you'll ever tackle the problem in the way some want it to be tackled. But going on to a happier story, this is just brilliant, brilliant story. A Worcester actress, she was left lost for words after her very own Mr. Darcy appeared on stage at the end of Worcester Rep's production of Pride and, I should say the correct title, Pride and Brackets, quite a lot of, closed brackets, Prejudice.
So she was acting in the performance.
She was acting in the performance.
He wasn't. She surprised her.
She was Emma in the classic Pride and Prejudice.
Mm-hmm.
And they did the end, the scene Mr. Darcy proposes. And everyone clapped, and it was in the beautiful Commandery Gardens. Watch the video. Go on Twitter at Worcester. I think it's at Worcester Rep. It may be, but if it isn't, I'll clarify that. But search for Worcester Rep anyway. They've got the video on there, so they do the performance, and then Ben Humphrey, the director, said, "Oh, we'll do the last scene again."
Mm.
So dutifully, Genevieve. Lo, who's playing Emma, obviously being an actress, do it again, and Mr. Darcy appears on stage, they do the whole scene again. I feel like I'm spoiling the video here. But then Mr. Darcy, I should give him a name check as well, Charlie Ryan, goes off the stage, Genevieve turns round, and there is her own Mr. Darcy, who is Shane Grant, I should mention him as well, obviously very important to the story, who goes down on one knee.
And proposes. How amazing. And I want that to happen to me. That's just, that's made my day, because I love a good proposal.
It is.
Whenever I want cheering up, I always look on YouTube at all those exciting video proposals where I like the ones where, what's the word, where they do the mob, flash mobs.
Flash mobs, yes.
Love a flash mob proposal,
it's
I do. But
so,
this,
so well organised.
But this is even better.
Shane deserves a huge amount of credit. And without saying fully what one correspondent said on Facebook, very much praised him for going through with it, because it took a lot of courage.
It did.
But so to Genevieve Lo and to Shane Grant, congratulations from all of us. You are on the front page of the newspaper. You have been all over our website. But you are on the front page. So I'm sorry about that, but it's such a happy story. And
absolutely.
I think at times we live in such a doom-laden world. And hey, if you want to talk about the podcast, if you want to talk about the proposal and want to share what was going through your mind, Shane, inspire blokes, or maybe there's most blokes going, oh, cheers, mate, you've raised the bar now. Because it makes my own proposal just look a bit...
How did you do it?
I just basically put it in a fancy box.
Oh.
An Art Deco box.
Okay, that's nice. That's like the classic way, isn't it?
It was a Christmas present. And it wasn't as entertaining as this.
No, this will take some beating.
But
my future husband's going to do something like this. I'm just putting it out there.
If he ever is listening
to this in the future, this is the way I would like to be proposed to.
Yes. So he's got to be an actor. No, you've got to be an actress.
Well, I could... He could come on a podcast or something. Who knows? He's got to think around... Yeah, I don't know.
There we go.
It's a challenge.
Future husbands, take note.
Putting it out there.
Fantastic, wonderful thing. And as I said, congratulations, Genevieve, and to Shane. And all the best for a very, very long and happy life together.
Yeah, lovely story.
Wonderful, wonderful story. Where shall we go next?
It's a great looking paper again, full of exciting stories. Lots of positivity this week, I'm saying.
Yes, I think the sun has something to do. I think people give us a lot more positive stories when the sun comes out. I think when it's raining, it's all about council tax rises.
Yeah.
I think we've got a lot of positive. And I think what I'll draw attention to is Worcester's Riverside Park has become the latest in the city. Yes, the latest, because we're that good. We're that good at in Worcester now. We get green flags all over the place. So we've got another one now in the Riverside Park. Brilliant this is, because it's a beautiful park, but it's sort of ignored.
Right. Why is it ignored?
Because I think it's because it's so close to the river. Mm. I think the river sort of takes the attention away. The Riverside Park, though, is beautiful. Mm. I'm going to cough. Excuse me. That's what I love about the podcast. It's so unedited. It's brilliant. But Worcester's Riverside Park has joined the list of Green Flag Award winners. And special mention for Councillor Andy Stafford, because Dex the dog, he's walking Dex the dog, and they put him in the picture. Brilliant.
Oh, nice.
But that's got the Green Flag Award as part of the National Keep Britain Tidy campaign. And it's joined Gellyvale, Cripplegate Park and Fort Royal, all having retained their awards.
We're lucky, aren't we, in Worcester? We've got so many beautiful parks.
Absolutely.
You're right, I go to most of the parks, but I don't really go to this one. So no. Maybe that's why.
Well, now it's an award-winning park.
I've got to go there. Yeah.
Fantastic. And lovely picture as well. Another green flag as well. I mean, to be honest, Keep Britain Tidy, I'll make an open challenge to you. If you ever want to take it away from Gellyvale, Cripplegate or Fort Royal, you expect some negative press, because I don't see how you can, because they're beautiful and they're really well kept as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
School holidays coming up as well, I think very important to mention. You've got the chance to step back in time at the Commandery this summer. Do find out all about that, because obviously, parent myself, you know, starting to think, what can we do for 6 whole weeks? Commandery, great thing to do. There's a great story in the paper about how you can step back in time and find out all about the past, and with activities dedicated for kids. I do want to draw your attention to that. Another one I want to draw attention to, because he's a great, great bloke, he's a pleasure to deal with, but a county social entrepreneur who's worked with community groups, get this, has generated grants totaling more than 1.2 million. He's worked with groups all across the Midlands, and he's earned them 1.2 million in grants.
Wow.
Now, he's urged city groups, because we know all the good causes in Worcester.
Mm.
He's urged them to get in touch with him and actually look at ways, because if you need a grant, he can unlock them for you.
Can we get him on the podcast? He'd be fascinating to talk to. He's obviously a man with persuasion skills that, you know, he's obviously going to be an amazing talker, isn't he?
He's a very, very good, amazing talker. And yes, things are in the pipeline.
Oh, okay.
Already,
so am I jumping the gun?
But not necessarily about this particular story, but the Best of Worcester Awards are coming up. I shall say no more than that.
Oh, okay.
We've got the Best of Worcester Awards later this year. And I had some very fruitful discussions about getting people on the podcast.
Are we going to be the best newspaper, of course, in Worcester?
We're not necessarily going to be. I don't think they give that award.
Oh, I think we're self-declared that.
Yes, well, let's blow our own trumpet. But we will be heavily involved in it, and I think I'm going to have to put a shirt and tie on again.
Oh, fantastic.
And go and present an award.
Oh, brilliant.
And I've done it for 2 years, and apparently I've done a good job, so they want to feed me and
great.
Present an award
good,
again.
Good so night out.
It is. Do you know what? It's one of the best, and it's one of the most privileges of the job, because you realise in that room, because it's often at the assembly room at the Guildhall.
Mm.
Really long, you know, beautiful, beautiful section, but it's filled with people who basically don't ask for a penny to make Worcester better. They run clubs, societies, groups. And it's filled with them.
Oh, it's amazing. Well, one of the most amazing things I always think about Worcester is we do have so many people like that here. People who just love our city and will do anything for it.
Yeah.
And I feel that there's positivity in the air. I feel that there's so many local independent stores reopening up. And
yeah.
I just feel like it's a good time for Worcester. I think we've got good things coming, and I think it's due to the incredible people that we've got here.
Absolutely. Could not agree more. Well said. But this is Keith's, just going back, he wants local causes to get in touch because he can help you with a funding bid. So don't think you can't apply for funding, because chances are, if you're a good cause, you probably can do.
And he's obviously got the knack of doing it.
Well, I mean, to deliver 1.2 million, I mean, he's contacted me because he's the most recent success was he's won £500,000 for a charity over in Derbyshire.
Wow.
In a grant. £500,000.
Wow. Because a lot of these things, I mean, the money is available, isn't it? But it's just knowing how to do it. There must be a knack of the way of writing the proposals and things
and
like that.
And that's what Keith does. He's got his own community interest company called Community Boost. It's designed to help small community-based organisations access funding, to use a term, but basically get money. It is brilliant, and he wants to get it over 2 million before he calls it a day.
Okay.
And it's a brilliant thing. I'll give you the email address, info@regeneratingcommunities.com. info@regeneratingcommunities.com. Put you in touch with Keith, he'll get back to you. He's a really, really nice guy. Although, I'll make a confession at this point, I actually called him Keith Draper, because there's another contact of mine called Keith Draper, and he actually kept it quiet until we actually met him and said, "Who's Keith Draper?" I was like, "It's you." I was just like, "No, Slater." So now every time I email him, I just go, "Hello, Mr. Draper." strange behaviour, but I'm on antibiotics for a story I won't bore you with now. And I'm going to praise the railways.
Okay.
I'm going to praise a train company.
Now, you don't often hear that.
Don't turn off, please, because it is worth it. West Midlands Railway are offering free travel to students that want to go... aspiring students, I should say, that want to go to an open day at the University of Worcester on the 8th of September.
Oh, right.
If you register with the university, you can get free rail travel. So we're talking anywhere in the West Midlands you want to study at the University of Worcester, you can travel free and find out what the brilliant University of Worcester has to offer. So well done, West Midlands Railway.
That's a nice thing to do, yeah.
And... actually, on the subject of well done to England's cricketers.
Oh my goodness, I wondered when you were going to get here, because you're a bit of a cricket fan, aren't you?
Just a bit, just a tad.
See, I wasn't before Sunday, now I am. I got dragged into watching the last hour of it, and I've never ever been so excited in my whole life,
no.
And so panicked, and so worried, and all emotions all cocktailed into one, but it was incredible.
I think Sunday afternoon was the most dramatic afternoon of British sport I think this country's ever seen.
Yeah.
You had a Grand Prix that was a little bit boring, but there was a lot of drama within it, but it sort of got relegated. I mean, I am a massive cricket fan. I thought England had lost it.
I did.
Certainly that last hour, but so... I went channel hopping because I was just like, oh, I don't want to see New Zealand win, because I was disappointed. Although I have to... No, I'll come back to what I was going to say about New Zealand. So I went channel hopping to watch Wimbledon. And I thought, well, it's gone 6 o'clock. I thought, well, somebody's going to be lifting the trophy now. No. Fifth set, 12 games all.
Oh, my goodness.
And I thought, how on earth are these two sportsmen... They've been playing for like 4 hours, something?
Yeah.
To that level of intensity for 4 hours.
It's insane, isn't it?
It's absolutely insane.
Well, I was doing that. I started watching the tennis. Yeah. I mean, I was watching the tennis, but then I got dragged into the cricket kind of thing. And then that was it. I was glued to the cricket. Even though I thought we were going to win, and then I thought we were going to lose. And then, oh my goodness, I...
Well, it got to the last over, 15, and... I've been watching cricket for a long time, back in the day, and I'm sure cricket fans out there will agree with me. 15 off the last over was impossible 20 years ago.
Mm.
Now it's eminently possible. But when the first two balls, there were no runs, I thought, well, this is gone. And then a 6 off one knee by Ben Stokes, who, FYI, if he doesn't get an honour in the New Year's honours, questions will be asked. He's not even a Worcestershire cricketer, but I may lead the campaign. I mean, to run out, the score's tied, and then a super over, you've got to work out what a super over is.
Well, I was on the phone to my brother, who plays cricket, and I was like, what's a supernova? What's a supernova? And he was like, it's a star system, Claire, but are you talking about the cricket? By any chance? A super over, and he explained. But have you ever seen a super over before?
I'd never seen one.
Had you heard of it before?
I'd heard it because they changed the regulations, because a little-known fact... I can't remember when, but until recently, maybe as recently as 5 years ago, England would have lost the World Cup because they would have lost the World Cup on, because they were bowled out for 241 and New Zealand were 241 for 8. New Zealand would have won because they lost fewer wickets. But the Super Over was introduced to ensure that didn't happen.
Oh, okay.
But I'd never seen one. I'm trying to rack my brains. I'm pretty sure I've never seen one on a televised cricket match I've watched. I think that's important to caveat. On a televised cricket match I've watched. I don't think I've ever seen one.
Right. But it was thrilling, wasn't it?
It was.
And when it hit his bat and he got another six, and that, I mean, we were lucky. England was lucky.
Yes.
We're not often lucky in sport.
No, I mean.
And it was our time, wasn't it?
I mean,
the supernovas aligned.
Ben Stokes is caught on the boundary. On another day, Trent Bolt holds that catch and Ben Stokes is out. But just the one fullback was treading on the boundary rope.
I didn't understand that. So you're not, if you catch it for a six, but you touch the boundary, then
it's a six.
It's a six. Oh, because you can't be out.
That rubber thing that goes around the boundary is actually the boundary. So if you touch it, you're deemed to have carried the ball over the boundary.
Oh, okay. So it's a bit like netball.
So you can throw it away, mm-hmm. as he did. Because my wife actually said that. He said, but he threw it away.
Yeah.
I said, it doesn't matter. I said he touched it.
Right.
If he stands there and doesn't touch the boundary rope and then throws it away because he thinks, oh, I'm falling over here.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm doing all the actions. I'm doing the actions again.
You're doing it for my benefit and I appreciate it because it's making it clear now.
Bless you.
But
but if he throws it away and doesn't touch it and someone else catches it, then it's out.
Got you. Okay.
But I'm going here. So he threw it away, but unfortunately the momentum took his foot. Because I've seen it before, people have thrown it away, fallen over the boundary, having let go of it.
Right.
And one of his mates has run around and caught it.
Yeah.
So that's a bit, look, I mean.
But hats off to the Kiwis as well, because even at that moment, the Kiwi guy that he threw it to, he put his hand up to say they got a six.
They were
gentlemen, weren't they? It is a gentleman's game.
Absolutely. And when that ball hit Ben Stokes' bat and ran away for four, I mean, that is the worst look you could do, because, I mean, you've seen cricket bats. They're a very odd shape apart from the face, because their edges and then the back are different angles. For him to dive and for the ball to hit the bat perfectly.
So why did he get that then? Because it wasn't his turn to bat it. It's just if the bat hits it and it goes to the board at any time in the game.
If it's not dead, the ball is live.
Oh, right.
So if you've seen it before, it's thrown into the wicketkeeper catches it and then everyone stops and has a chat for two or three seconds and then the bowler gets the ball back and runs in again.
Mm.
Until it's fielded, the ball's live.
Oh,
so there's nothing to stop anyone hitting it. And if no one ever fielded it, you could run like 27 or something.
Ah, okay.
But it hit the bat flush and then ran away. If that hits the edge and it just bounces up in the air or something.
Someone could have caught it and he could have been out.
No, he wouldn't.
He wouldn't have been out.
No, because he'd hit the shot.
Right, okay. Gosh, it's very complicated, isn't it?
But this is cricket. I'm tempering everyone's enthusiasm because they all want to learn more about it, but don't learn too much about it because it might bore you.
And we want every game to be like last Sunday, don't we?
No, I'm not sure the
My
nerves,
heart, yeah, that's
I'm
true.
I'm not sure the nerves can take it. I mean, if England had chased that in 30 overs and had spent 2 hours celebrating rather than us sitting there, because, I mean, my son was late to bed because he was staying up and watched it. He was running around the room celebrating, even though he's only 4 years old. But I've got a lot of sympathy for the Kiwis because, you know, in sport, you wake up the following morning if you've been beaten, well, how did we lose that? And inevitably human nature is, oh, well, we lost that because of X, Y and Z. There isn't any single one of those Kiwis that could say, oh, well, we lost that because of this. Because
they were unlucky and we were lucky.
On another day, Ben Stokes gets caught, that ball doesn't hit the bat, and they win.
Yeah.
And it's desperately, desperately unfortunate. And there's a lot of people saying the trophy should be shared. I get the opinion, I get it, I do, but I think modern sport...
No, we won. We won fair and square.
Modern sport demands a winner and a loser.
Yeah, it's totally right. Do any of those England guys play for us here in Worcester?
Moeen Ali.
Okay.
On the back page, if you take a look on the back page...
Which one was he?
He didn't play in the final, but he was part of the squad and played a few games during the tournament.
Oh, brilliant.
England's all-rounder, Moeen Ali, batsman, off-spin bowler, and he will be playing in the Vitality Blast. Worcestershire defend that trophy, which starts tomorrow as we record this on Wednesday. That's live on Sky Sports as well, so you can see Mo in action. Hopefully in a game that won't go to a super overall. The last few balls. I don't know why I'm coughing. I do apologise if it's affecting the sound quality in any way. But just to make a sort of generic point, and I'm sorry, I'm going to make it boring, and if this is boring, I do apologise. But this team's made up. They're not all born here. You know, they're as English as they come. I mean, Ben Stokes was born in New Zealand, but I think if you ask him if he's British, he'd probably say he's British.
Hmm.
But you've got people born abroad but are as English now as anything. You've got people of all races, all colours, all religions. And some of the team shots just made me very, very, very proud to be British.
Yeah.
Because we've got a world champion team full of white blokes, full of Asian blokes, and we've got, admittedly, there's only one, but we've got a very, very talented young black bowler.
Mm.
And I think it screams everything about this country that our world championship team is made up. It's not just all whites. And
exactly. Doesn't matter, does it, where you were born or whatever, no. But they're all Englishmen. They were proud to play for England, and we're so proud of them. And all different religions,
exactly.
And races, creeds, colours. It's
brilliant.
It's,
and I do want to pull the telegraph up on something, actually. I'm getting a bit militant with my comments. I do apologise, but I do want to pull the telegraph up on something. They've said today Moeen Ali and Adil Rashid were forced to leave the presentation because of the champagne spraying. They weren't forced to leave anything. They chose to leave because of their religion.
Oh, because they don't drink.
But for a brief moment, while the champagne was sprayed, they chose, out of respect for their beautiful religion of Islam, to step away. They weren't forced to do it. No player forced them to
choice.
Do it. And I think such derogatory language is an insult to actually both the remaining players, but also to Moeen Ali and Adil Rashid.
But who are they? Who are the Telegraph inferring forced them to do it?
Exactly. Yeah. That's why I want to. I think such language is dangerous.
Mm.
They've chosen to do it. I've seen it with my own eyes. Moeen left the celebrations when Worcester won the Vitality Blast.
Mm.
Whilst the champagne was sprayed, and then joined his team immediately. It wasn't like he couldn't celebrate the whole thing. They're just a minuscule part.
Maybe he's just like me, and he's just like, he doesn't like it because it's such a waste.
Well, there is
that's
that.
My thing. I mean, when I see them spraying those champagne bottles, I'm always like, no, such a waste of good champagne.
I'm the same, but I'm the same more with Grand Prix, though. Because these blokes have been driving around in a hot car for 2 hours and everything. And they're as fit as anything, so they haven't got to worry about dehydration because they're used to it.
Mm.
And then they spray it all away. I'd be like, if I won a race in a car like
You'd
that...
You'd be glugging it down.
I'd be like, no, cheers, everyone. But no, sincerest congratulations. I don't think the country will ever recover in a positive... from that experience.
Well, we're the first country in the world to have won the World Cup cricket, World Cup football, and the World Cup rugby.
Yeah, indeed.
It's pretty amazing.
And I don't think it'll ever be repeated.
No.
Unless I think Australia wins. I think Australia, if they can ever win the Football World Cup, they'd achieve the same feat.
Yeah, we've set the bar, world.
And also, as a friend of mine pointed out on Monday morning, yes, England have done that, but it's all been in extra time as well.
Well, we like to keep people on the edge of their seats.
So not only do we win it and set the bar, but we do it dramatically.
We give a
as well.
Good show.
We don't do it, you know, we don't do it just in normal time. No, we keep everyone on the edge of their seats.
Yeah.
England, the home of sporting entertainment. Brilliant picture, I should say. Thanks to Worcestershire for letting us use the picture of Moeen with the World Cup. It's a fantastic little picture. Admittedly, Lord's is dark, but then if you have been paying attention to these World Cup celebrations, I think the players spent most of the night celebrating. And why not? Because they deserved it immensely. And it's great for cricket as well, because we've got the Vitality Blast starting on Thursday.
Brilliant.
Which is 20 over cricket. If you've been inspired, pick up a bat and ball. It's so easy.
Mm.
You don't need all the equipment. Some cynics will say, oh, cricket needs a lot of equipment. It don't. You need a bat, ball, and you can set up stumps anywhere. It can be a bin or anything. get involved with
or
cricket.
Or get yourself down to our local Worcestershire County Cricket Club. Aren't we lucky just having that on our doorstep as well?
At the beautiful New Road, which is going to host the local derby, I should mention, on Friday between Worcestershire Rapids and the Birmingham Bears. If you know them, they're Warwickshire, but they call themselves the Birmingham Bears. And given the recent record, it'll probably be another thrashing from the Worcestershire Rapids teaching those neighbours up the road a lesson.
Do you get to go to these things?
I'd like to go more.
Yeah, I guess.
But I've very kindly been furnished with a press pass.
Oh, nice.
So it is very privileged to go and watch it from the beauty of the press box. And hopefully the guys will defend their trophy, because no one's ever won the Vitality Blast 2 years in a row. So maybe Worcestershire could do that. But get involved with cricket and don't listen to the cynics and say, oh, it's 5 days and it ends in a draw. There's something for everyone now. 20-over cricket, the Vitality Blast, it's over in 3 hours. It's not going to be a draw. It's going to be entertaining. It's going to be fun. Use that as the entry point, then discover one-day cricket, then four-day cricket, then test match cricket.
And I also love the way they stop and have their afternoon teas and cakes and sandwiches. It's very British, isn't it?
Oh, it's very British. This is why we invented the game. And I think we should always remember that. And the genteelness. You can watch a test match between South Africa and the West Indies. They'll always break for tea. Something very British. There's a stream of Britishness throughout it.
I remember when I was little, I watched my first introduction to cricket was Bodyline, that TV. Was it a show, a series or a film? And it was Don Bradman and it was the Americans and the Australians.
I should point out in Claire's defence, she didn't watch it live because it was in the
1930s. Okay. Well, I watched it on my parents' television, but that was my first introduction to cricket and I always thought it was so exciting. And then my brother started playing and I used to get dragged along to every cricket match. And I have to say, Rob, I wasn't a fan. Never understood it really and always thought it was very boring. But I've been converted after Sunday. Yeah. I'm a changed woman. I love cricket now.
I think there's an obsession that somehow you must have to understand it all. Don't try and understand it. Because certainly in the version I'm talking about, they keep talking about the Vitality Blast, it's basically ball, bowled, batsman tries to hit it for 4 and 6. If it goes flying over the boundary very high, it's a 6. If it goes along the ground, it's 4.
Mm.
But just enjoy it. Because I think it showed, were they saying that I'm not going to get into the debate about whether it should be on free-to-air or not, because that's a whole new podcast probably, but I think it was 8.5 million people at the peak.
Wow.
I think 4.5 million on Channel 4, 4 on Sky Sports.
Wow.
8.5 million people watching cricket. I mean, that.
And the tennis going on at the same time.
Yeah. Brilliant afternoon of sport. And I just think, I've always said this about Britain, we organise things well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think maybe next year, or maybe when this happens again, we try and move one of these events to a different day.
Yeah.
Because it was just too much. I mean, luckily the Grand Prix finished before the cricket got into its nail-biting.
Is it 4 years?
Every 4 years,
okay.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think it's the only time it's played in what we call the summer, because everyone else is south of the equator.
Oh, of course.
So it'll be played January, February, March time in what would be either, certainly in the subcontinent, would be avoid the rainy season.
Yeah.
But also, it's down under, I think the next T20 World Cup, the 20-over World Cup, I think it's in Australia. So that'll be played January, February time, because obviously that's the Antipodean summer.
Right, yeah. Gosh, you have to think of all these things. Whoever manages to plan everything, I have
know,
no idea.
The logistics people in sport deserve knighthoods, because they must be spinning many plates at many times. Anyway, that's the news. I think it's time we reach into the mailbag.
Oh, yeah, we had some people contact us with some questions for you. We're going to start this new feature, which is Ask the Editor. So every week we're going to hopefully have people email us and ask you questions, Rob. So our first question was from a Maddie James in Worcester. And she wants to know, Rob, how did you become an editor of the Worcester Observer and what qualifications did you need? She says she wants to be a journalist when she's older and last term she edited her school magazine. So that was a good start, isn't it? But she'd like to write about news and animals when she's older. So any advice you've got for Maddie James in Worcester?
Well, yes, thank you, Maddie. Brilliant, brilliant question. And everyone thinks, oh, it's such a boring question to ask how you did it. But if nobody relates how you got into the industry, people won't know how to get in the industry. I made a mistake.
You made a mistake. You never make mistakes, Rob.
Oh, plenty. I made a mistake. I went to university and did journalism and English at the brilliant University of Central Lancashire, which journalism course is just A1 there, and you meet a lot of good friends and you have a very good night out, even though in Preston it rains a lot. That's a joke that they will understand if they're listening. I'm not offending the people of Preston in the slightest, but I made a mistake because I wanted to be a journalist for a long time, and I went and did journalism in English as a degree, and I came out thinking, right, I'm ready to be a journalist now. So I applied for two jobs, and they both went, you haven't got to the lack of the NCTJ qualification. And it's a shame to admit this, but I never knew what the NCTJ even was. Went online and went, oh, it's an actual course. So that's the first bit. To avoid my mistake, look for NCTJ either degrees or college courses. I did mine at the excellent City of Wolverhampton College, which is another fantastic venue. And what it does, it teaches you public affairs, which is local government, central government, what everything that goes on, what you need to learn. It's very boring, Maddie, and it's nothing to do with animals or anything, but it's very important to learn, because if you know how local government and central government works, your copy will just flow a lot easier. But it also teaches you the law.
Which is a massive thing, isn't it?
It is a massive thing. And you get, and probably if you want to go and study, this podcast could probably go 20 years into the future, you'll be given a book called McNay's Essential Law for Journalists. It's been around since ever. I think the first McNay was written in the Doomsday Book. I'm joking, but it's been around forever. But it is the Bible, and it still refers... You still refer to it now. I still do it as a job as editor now when something comes up that I think, ooh, I'm going to need to get some advice. But it teaches you all the legalities, what not to do, what to do. Some of it's common sense you'll learn, and some of it will land very easy. Some of it is very complicated and you need to understand it, because the more you understand and the more legally safe you are, the better you are as a proposition to your employer. But it also teaches shorthand.
Oh, yikes. I remember trying to learn shorthand. It's impossible. It really is impossible. I see Ross Crawford, who's our Redditch editor, because I work over in Redditch a lot, and I see him doing his shorthand all the time. And honestly, I think sometimes he's just pretending, because I'm like, Ross, there's no way you can reread that back. That is just scribbles on that page.
I think I've always had a theory. When you learn into it, and if you go into the NCTJ course, you'll find out more about it, and you need to get to 100 words a minute.
So can you do it?
Yeah.
Wow, I'm impressed.
But you fall into three categories. There'll be ones that never understand it and have to drag themselves kicking and screaming to achieve any sort of speed. That was me. There's the middle ground that sort of don't get it, but when they do get it, they fly. And there's the annoying group that I was on a college course with, who were taught the basics, the outlines, the alphabet, because you learn the alphabet again, basically. And they pick it up straight away, and they're racing through the speeds, and you're sitting there like, how are you finding this so easy? I can't even do it.
And you have to have that to get your NCT?
As long as you achieve a speed. I mean, I think I passed my NCTJ course. I think I only had 50 at the time.
Because there's lots of journalists that I know who don't use it.
No.
But...
Is it a dying art? I don't want to say it is... but it's becoming less important, because obviously now we've all got mobiles that have got recording devices on it. And I admit, I put my hands up completely. 9 times out of 10 when I'm interviewing somebody, I'll just record it on my phone and listen, transcribe it back. But I think it's important, and you must remember, it's the only legal admissible thing in court. So if you ever got there, shorthand's the only admissible thing in court. So if someone does take you to court, say, I didn't say it, and you can have your shorthand note that be independently verified.
How interesting. So that's even more admissible than a phone conversation that you've recorded.
Yeah, because technology, you could tinker with it. Whereas shorthand, if they verify it, obviously you can't just open a notepad and say, right, here's the controversial. It's got to be in the flow of an interview.
That's amazing.
There was a story going back many years now, Glenn Hoddle, the England football manager, said comments about the disabled, which we won't get into, and threatened to... Well, I didn't say that. The journalist has misinterpreted. Journalist's response was simple. I'll hand over my notes. And all of a sudden, nothing happened after that.
Wow.
Because he knew he said it, and he knew it was in the notes. But get the NCTJ course, but also get experience as well. We're a very good company for offering work experience here. We give you an insight into the job. But get experience at all types of the thing. I mean, I'm biased. I would say get your experience on a newspaper first before going into magazines or other forms of journalism, sports journalism, writing wildlife journalism. But get your experience. And quite simply, how I became an editor is I've just risen through the ranks. I mean, Bulletin Media, I started here November 2004, many moons ago, when I had black hair and looked a lot younger than I did do today. I started as a trainee reporter. I was the fifth journalist on the Bromsgrove Standard. There was, well, Bromsgrove and Droitwich Standard. I was the junior journalist there. And progression, because my tutor at university said journalism's the worst thing to get into, but once you're in, you can move about it freely.
Mm.
And my career, I'm feeling very philosophical and quite emotional now. But I moved forward very quickly because Charlotte Birch, who used to work here, brilliant lady, the best first editor you could have ever had, shook my hand and said, I'm the editor, Charlotte, and don't get too comfortable though, because I'm leaving soon to set up our Solihull paper. So I was like, okay. But then Cara Bradley, who worked here as well, she's moved on to, she's now in a PR job, but she went with her to the Solihull paper as well. So I went from being the fifth journalist to all of a sudden being the third journalist. I was like, oh. So I was getting more and more stuff. You build up experience. I made the decision, I can't remember now, I think it was 09, 010. I made the decision to ask to transfer from the, I was the chief reporter on the Bromsgrove and deputy editor on the Bromsgrove Standard. I made the decision to ask to be transferred to our Worcester paper because we lost a couple of journalists at the same time to career progression. And I went over to help the Worcester editor for 6 months, and 5 years later I'm still here. And I was given the very great honour of editing the paper.
And you do a great job.
Oh, you are. You do flatter
you
me.
You do a great job.
You do flatter me. But get the experience, get the NCTJ, get the experience. But have a love of it as well.
Mm.
Because no 2 days are the same.
And it is exciting, isn't it?
It is. I mean, no 2 days are the same.
And all news starts as local news. Everything is local once upon a time, isn't it?
Yeah.
So
it's not. And I think sometimes it's not the when, it's not the where, the how, or even the when. It's the why. Why is this story a story? Because sometimes you'll get a lot, you'll be very, very surprised. I think I've told it on the podcast, but it goes back to the Bromsgrove days, and it's a story Tristan Harris, our Bromsgrove editor, had. Lady phoned up and said, I make cakes for the old for a pensioners group. I think it was a pensioners group. It was a group in Bromsgrove, but I can't this year because there's a lard shortage.
A what shortage?
A lard shortage.
Okay.
And of course, Tris, being the dutiful journalist that he is, took down the details and came off the phone and went, I'm not sure this is right. You know, she makes these cakes. There isn't a lard shortage. And there's a lard shortage. And then goes online. National lard shortage, because it was all being...
You're having trouble saying that.
Lard shortage.
Say it again.
Lard shortage. But it was all being exported to, like, Latvia.
Hmm.
And it was running out. So ran the story. And before you knew it, there were people like, oh, there was butchers like, oh, I've got plenty. I'll give some for free to the lady. Before you know it, the whole community was
I think we should run a few stories, Rob, saying we've got a scratch card shortage or... some wine
Aston
shortage.
Aston Martin shortage.
Yeah, holidays in the Caribbean shortage.
I've got a distinct Aston Martin shortage.
Do you think people will deliver?
And based on my career, 15 years I celebrate in November, and I'm not saying that I wouldn't enjoy it, but I'm more than happy to review, you know, an Aston Martin. Should Aston Martin be listening and want to drop one off?
Don't get any ideas from us, Maddie.
Maddie,
go ahead.
Great question. Great question.
Great question.
And if you want to get into it, experience, qualifications, but have a love for the job as well.
Brilliant.
I don't think journalism's a job you can just do. I think you've got to enjoy it, and you've got to enjoy what you actually do.
Great answer. Have we got time for one more?
You're the producer.
Okay, one more we had from Carolyn Ryan. I don't actually know where she's from, but I think she must be from Worcester if she saw it on our social media. With so much fake news in the media, how do you make sure news you report isn't fake? And she asks if people ever try and tell you fake news stories for the paper.
great
question. That is a good question, isn't it?
On an issue that is driving journalism, I think, not just here in Worcester, but globally. I think the problem of fake news is affecting us all. The simple answer is you check. And there is always two sides to every story. So any allegation that's made, we check. If somebody... I'm careful I don't go into any specifics here. But if someone was to make an allegation, say, against the council, that the council have done this and I'm unhappy, they've done this, I've got the proof they've done this, I've got this, and this, then the first port of call is to go to the council and put the allegations to them. And if they say, well, we've got no record of this person, we've got no record of the work, you know the story's... You know, the story's done because the council wouldn't... Why would the council lie?
Right.
About that. If you can verify it and if you've got the proof... proof is the biggest thing. If people want to make an allegation, if they back it up and they've got the proof, then we'll run the story. I know we've done stories, antisocial behaviour. A few weeks ago, the cemetery story, the overgrown cemetery, it was there for all to see, and we challenged the council, and the council responded. Do people present fake news to us? Yes, they do.
Did they say, hey, I've won this shield in swimming?
No, I think it's far more darker than that. People use it to take advantage. They try and get an advantage.
Oh,
I've heard a rival restaurant, for example. None of these are real examples from Worcester, I should point out. There's a disclaimer. They're from other newspapers, not in our group, but further afield, I've heard from journalist friends.
Oh, so they're saying they found glass in their food.
I've heard this about another restaurant that's doing this. And you take it with a pinch of salt because you think, yes, but you want to gain commercially. And certainly politically... around election time, there's a lot going around that you have to investigate. And your reputable newspapers, local journalism, not just us, but all reputable local journalism will always investigate it. They won't just print the allegations.
Well, we're members of the News Media Association, and they do loads of reports about things like this and research. And local newspapers are the most trusted source of information, not just in this country, but in the world, in fact. We're more trusted than television, radio, national press. Local papers apparently do the most research and
we do the checking.
Yeah.
And I think to get Carolyn.
Her name is Carolyn Ryan.
To get to Carolyn's point, I think the best fight back against it is that we check and we check and we verify and we do everything we can before we publish. I mean, I don't think in 15 years as a journalist, I've ever printed something that was completely incorrect.
Right.
That's not blowing my own trumpet, because there's quite many journalists that work for this company and other companies that can say the same thing. I think it's checking. I think the problem is because the internet is unregulated.
Yeah.
And the fake news phenomenon. I think there's two strands to it. I think there's the fake news Carolyn talks about that... you know, stories that just aren't true, that do we print. But I think there's the fake news defence used by certain politicians when it's something that is clearly accurate, but to dismiss it as fake news is just branding the journalist a liar when it's clearly true.
Yeah.
And I think we've lost a certain amount of accountability on that one, because... they won't accept the accountability because it's just easy to go, well, you're fake news.
But also, I think probably online, there are so many people out there lauding themselves as journalists who aren't actually trained journalists, aren't there?
No, I mean, I'm just hesitating because my law knowledge is coming in. I think we're safe to talk about it, but I'll check and, well, this will never go to air if it's done. But the Tommy Robinson case, for example... Mm. Now, the law of the land is that this was a sexual offence case that Tommy Robinson got involved in, and he recorded the accused arriving at court.
Yeah.
Which is contempt of court, because on sexual offences cases, identification's often an issue.
Mm.
we in the media would never identify the accused because it's a matter for the jury to say, was it this man who did this to you? It should be heard in the courtroom. By filming him and publishing it, it was contempt of court.
Right.
But he describes himself as a journalist. He's got no qualifications.
Mm.
And I get free speech, and I don't want anybody accusing me of decrying free speech. I get that at all, but it's got to be within the law.
Journalists need like a little badge or something, rather, like, or it needs to be. You can't say you're a doctor unless you're a doctor. You should be able to.
We've got qualifications, but yeah. It's easy for. And this is the downside of citizen journalism, because I think everybody can be a journalist.
Mm.
Because one of the great ways we can interact with social media is there are certain groups on Facebook. They're all over the country, but they seem to be called Spotted In. And yeah. I think it might be a phenomenon across the country. I don't know. But certainly in Worcestershire, we've got a number of great groups spotted. Spotted Worcester, Spotted in Evesham. And there could be things like, oh, there's a load of ambulances in my road, you know, insert name of road. And you follow it up, and quite often the response you get, because you can go, oh, well, it's either nothing or it's quite serious. I mean, we had an incident in Evesham the other week. There was just like, oh, what's going on in my road? There's ambulances everywhere and police cars everywhere. Again, you get onto the ambulance service and find out it was a gentleman with some serious injuries was being treated at the scene.
But it can be dangerous because people can jump to conclusions and make up their own stories, and it quickly escalates to fake news.
But I think everybody in this modern era has their role to play in journalism, because if we don't know that, if they don't put it on, oh, there's a load of ambulances. They're not investigating, but they're doing a little bit of journalism because an incident's been reported. They're putting it on social media for people like us to follow up on.
Absolutely.
I went, that was a weird, follow up on? I don't know what accent that was. But no, it's a very good, very, very good question, Carolyn. I'm glad it was raised on one of the first mailbags.
Yeah, brilliant. Great, two great questions there. And yeah, keep them coming in. If you've got more questions to ask Rob, maybe about our newspaper, maybe about Worcester itself, anything really.
Don't get me on too much about the history, though.
We can always look it up.
Or cricket.
Oh, you know a lot about cricket.
Yeah, we could talk about cricket all day. How do we want people to send them in? Shall I say editor at Worcester Observer, or our numerous social media channels?
Yeah, you can send us a message on Facebook, Twitter or Instagram, and we'll hopefully put you in the mailbag and have your question answered on a future podcast.
Absolutely terrific. And thank you both to Maddie and to Carolyn for sending them in. We'll give you profuse name checks as well. For taking the time to send them in. I really like that. I enjoyed that.
And you answered those very well.
Well, I tried. I tried my best. What I also enjoy as well, great segue, is what's going on in Worcester over the next 7 days. And that must mean it's time for Claire's What's On Worcester Roundup.
For all the things to do and see this week, it's Claire Bullivant with this week's What's On Guide.
Thanks, Rob. Yes, there are some fun things happening this weekend in town. Starting off on Friday, the 19th of July, we've got loads of live music events happening all over the place. One to watch is Simon Wallace, who will be playing at the Bush Inn in St John's on Friday night. Simon has actually been living and playing in France for the last 20 years, but he's back home now, here in Worcester. He's worked with many different bands, but at the moment he's playing solo, and his repertoire kind of includes, think Oasis, some Beatles stuff, Bob Marley, Bob Dylan, Rolling Stones, plus he's got some of his own original songs, which are really great. If you get the chance, do go and listen to Simon do his thing. He's great, and we also love the Bush Inn too. Always a great night there. Also, it's always a good night over at Paradiddles on Friday night. And this Friday, we've got local performers and bands, including Jake Martin, B-Sides, and Shotgun Marmalade. All great local bands bringing down the house. And of course, Paradiddles is always packed and loads of fun. Over at the Worcester Arts Workshop on Friday evening, we've got an old school disco with Ed Steel Fox going on there. That's also one of my favourite places to go. Always great fun with Ed Steel Fox. And when they do their old school discos, They really do them properly. It's brilliant fun. You'll guarantee to have a great time. The Mars Bar also has a great lineup on Friday. How are you going to choose? With Chevy Chase Stole My Wife, Frog Soufflé and Hannah Law on the bill there. And another great band I really love at the moment is Hip Kiss. Well, they're called Hip Kiss Band, is their full title, and they're going to be on at the Sociable Beer Company on Friday night. I've recently caught this band, and they're great. It's kind of, think original funk, rock and blues with some of your favourite covers thrown in. Really great musicianship and a fun night out. Entry is always free, so you can't beat that either, can you? However, if you're more into your jazz and ballads, you'll want to head on over to Malvern on Friday evening as we have a tribute to Django and Stefan happening at Colwall Village Hall. This is local boys Ben Holder and Stuart Carter-Smith playing the music once played by the legendary Django Reinhardt and Stefan Grappelli. From swinging jazz, beautiful ballads to rip-roaring explosions of amazing music, it's going to be a fabulous night, so don't miss that over in Malvern. Moving on to Saturday, the 20th of July, may the toys be with you. Yes, you've probably read about it in the paper and heard us chat about it on last week's podcast. It's the Star Wars exhibition happening at Worcester City Art Gallery and Museum, all kicking off there on Saturday. So if you're a Star Wars fan, definitely get yourself over there. It's going to be amazing. And it's a busy Saturday, lots of different things going on. There's a super car fest happening at Shelsley Walsh. This is the hill climb place, WR6, 6RP is the postcode for your sat nav. And this is showcasing the best modern day and classic supercars ever built. You can catch the supercars parading up the famous hill, and do get your earplugs ready for some very exclusive supercar and motorsport demonstration runs. Those cars can be very noisy. Aside from the cars, though, you and your family can have a great time because there's going to be trade stands there, there's restaurants, something to eat, something to drink. There are also going to be live bands playing popular music right the way through up until 10 p.m. Supercarfest.co.uk for all the details. It's going to be a fabulous day. Also on Saturday, Crafternoon for Mind is happening at Huntington Hall. This is where crafters and their families are invited to craft the afternoon away and raise money for mental health charity Mind. So a great cause there. Higher on the Maiden, they're the brilliant Iron Maiden tribute band. They're going to be performing on Saturday at the Mars Bar. Definitely one to watch. And we've also got some great live music happening over in Malvern. The Clarksville Mountain Band will be performing at the Cross Keys in Malvern on Saturday night. Just James is on at the Unicorn in Malvern on Saturday. And everyone's favourites, the Tyler Macy Trio. They'll be doing their thing at the West Malvern Cricket Club on Saturday night there. On to Sunday, the 21st of July, my favourite thing to do is the Film Orchestra Concert Band, who again will be on at 2:30 p.m. in Priory Park in Malvern. I love these. If the weather's nice, take a picnic and enjoy the fabulous orchestra play some of your favourite film scores in the beautiful park. It's always lovely. It's honestly one of my favourite things to do. And hopefully I'll see you there. Hopefully the sun is going to shine this weekend. Then next week, on Monday the 22nd of July, it's the Rocky Horror Picture Show coming to town at Malvern Theatres. Again, this is one of my favourite films and theatre experiences ever. So much fun. I think I know it word for word. This is going to be on until the 27th of July, so you've got a few opportunities to see it all through next week. Malvern-theatres.co.uk for your tickets to that. Also next week, on Tuesday the 23rd of July, just something I want to mention that you might want to take your kids to now they're off school. It's the Battle of Worcester tour happening at the Commandery in Worcester. There are two tours, one at 11 a.m. and one at 1 p.m. And you get a walking tour of Fort Royal Park and also a tour of the Civil War story. They're really well done and really informative, but fun as well, so your kids will enjoy it. And when these tours do come up, they often get booked up very quickly, so I always suggest booking a place as soon as you can. You can get all the details from the Commandery, and hopefully I'll be able to go to that as well. And that's on Tuesday the 23rd of July, so I might see you there. And that concludes my top picks to do this weekend. Back to you, Rob.
Thank you, Claire. Another great podcast. We've gone on and on and on again.
We just have so much to talk about, don't we?
Always do, every week. It's always, always, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for your questions, Maddie and Carolyn. Thank you to all of those that have contributed to such a positive week of stories. Again, it's a sunshine week this week. I'm sure negativity is only just around the corner.
No, let's keep it positive.
But until next week, until we meet again, until we talk again, I've been your host, Rob George. Thanks to Claire for her contribution, as always. I think we're done here. Bye-bye.